This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Well, before we headed into our annual August recess, we did a show on autumn storms and volatility. Now, instead of a volatile September, the month of September was actually a good month for the markets, with major indexes hitting all-time records. It really goes to show that predicting volatility and storms can be a tricky business. And the interesting thing, instead of the storms hitting in September, they hit this week in October, where we, of course, not only had a horrific hurricane hit Florida, but also a big storm on Wall Street, with the Dow losing over 1,300 points. That wiped out last month's gains and most of the stock market gains of this year. So, Jim, what gives here?
You know, Chris, I thought we would be facing autumn storms this fall due to a number of worry factors, everything from the coming rate hikes, trade wars, emerging market turmoil, rising oil prices, Iranian sanctions, and the fall political elections, which are just, 22, 23 days away, where we could see a complete power shift that would be negative for the markets. Basically, my timing was off by a month, but it is still autumn, so those factors that investors worry about are still lurking out there. And I want to cover a bunch of them, because anytime you see the market drop 800 points, 500 points, I mean, if you're in the financial media, you got to tell your listeners, hey, what's going on? What was out there? What was behind it? Well, it's never usually one issue, and there's a number of them, and let's talk about them. Number one, the Fed has indicated it plans another rate hike at the end of the year, so more rate hikes are on the way. Number two, the trade war with China is still going on and shows no signs of either side giving in. Number three, the rise in interest rates and further rate hikes ahead and a strong dollar are wreaking havoc in emerging markets, which have been and continue to remain in bear market territory. Number four, something we've talked about all year, oil prices pulled back this week, but I'm in the camp that believes they're still heading higher. Number five, although not a problem at this point, there's the potential with the rise in wages and tariffs on the global supply chain, we could see inflation pick up. Number six, the government is running close to a $1 trillion deficit and has large financing needs. At the time, the Fed is shrinking its balance sheet, which means more supply of bonds is coming to the market, and there's fewer big buyers like the Federal Reserve. Number seven, the valuation of markets are not cheap. And in the case of the FAM or the FANG stocks, they're in bubble-like territory. And finally, number eight, something I don't hear anyone talking about, this one is the Pentagon, and the U.S. military has shifted its strategy towards great power confrontation and away from the war on terror. This includes moving missile batteries out of the Middle East, and for the first time in decades, we do not have a carrier battle group. I know here in our own port of San Diego, four of our 10 carrier battle groups are stationed here. Two of them are in port right now. So, Chris, depending what you're focused on in the markets, there's something for everyone to worry about.
And Jim, with the downturn that we are seeing right now, obviously a lot of our listeners are really curious about what to make of it. So is this something serious? Should investors be going to cash? Do you think this is the top? What do you think, Jim? I mean, is this time to crawl inside a bunker? What do you make of this? You know, it reminds me of what happened earlier this year when the markets lost 12% in a single week. What's your take?
Well, I mean, there are a number of takeaways here that we need to point out. Number one, corrections are a healthy and regular part of the market cycle. There have been 36 of them since 1950, and these are corrections where the market fell 10% or more, which averages out, when you think about it, to about one every 2 years. Now, if we are down 10% on this one, because at the time we're doing this show, it is Friday morning, and the markets are up. But if it's down 10%, let's say we go down next week, it'll make two 10% corrections in 1 year, which is kind of unusual. But as you get close to the end of a bull market and the end of a business cycle, things get more volatile, as they do during most late stages of a Fed rate raising cycle. So that's takeaway point number one. A second point is stock market corrections are historically violent. They're scary and they're short lasting. Think back to February of this year, when the first 6 weeks of, or let's say the first 6 weeks of 2016, when the market went down every week for six straight weeks in a row. A third point, declines are not notable when you look at them on a percentage basis. For example, the 545-point decline on Thursday is not the same when, let's say, the S&P was at 2,700 and the S&P lost 523 points in a single day, which was a loss of 23%. In percentage terms, it's not the same. Unfortunately, the media focuses on the number, not the percentage. And those numbers sound pretty big, but the market indexes are so much higher today than in the past. I mean, the Dow fell 845 points on Wednesday, but you got to remember, it was coming down from a Dow that was at 27,000. So it's the percentages that really matter most. Takeaway point number four, there is rarely a single factor or a single reason why stocks correct lower. Although the trigger might have been the breakout in Treasury yields this week, when we saw 10-year Treasuries get to about 3.25%, there are other factors out there behind the decline, as we just mentioned above, when it came to worries plaguing the market. So pick your worry. It could be a combination of any one of them. And another factor, point number five, is the simple truth, predicting a stock market downturn or an upturn, its exact timing is virtually impossible to do over the long run. We've had some really great technicians on this show, and even they will admit sometimes when these things arrive out of the blue, it takes them by surprise. I thought the fall would be characterized by autumn storms and volatility. They usually are. If you look back historically over the last 3 or 4 decades, I don't know why it is, but usually September and October are usually the rockiest points of the year when it comes to the market. Well, this time I was off by a month. Instead of storms and volatility in September, what we got was actually record stock prices. And finally, I would say point number six, psychology may change abruptly when events suddenly turn and they can flip back just as fast. 3 weeks ago, the cry was, boy, get me in. I want to be invested in stocks. Why? Because the market was setting all-time record highs. Fast forward to this week, and the cry among investors is, get me out. Should I sell? The difference is that usually after a severe downdraft, as let's say happened early in February of this year, it takes a while before confidence comes back into the market. If we look at what happened in the first couple of weeks of the year, when we got that downdraft in February, the market lost 12%. And it really wasn't until, let's say, midsummer when investor enthusiasm came back into the market.
Well, and I think of all those points, Jim, the one that really stands out to me is the third one you mentioned, which just looking at this from a percentage basis, it's really not a substantial drop at this point. So with Halloween being just a couple of weeks away, we'll just consider this a mild Halloween decline, perhaps. But also, Jim, I noticed that over the last several weeks, I've been very careful to listen to where you're keeping the R word, recession. And I know that for the last several weeks, you've maintained that we're not near a recession or even close to a bear market. Are you still holding that view now?
I still hold that view. There is still too much stimulus that is flowing into the economy as a result of tax cuts and increased government spending. I mean, the deficit this year will be close to $1 trillion, and next year it will be over $1 trillion. So there will be $460 billion in stimulus in the form of tax cuts and increased government spending. Don't forget, in addition to the $1.5 trillion in tax cuts, Congress authorized an additional $100 billion of spending to take place in fiscal year 2018, which just ended in September, in fiscal year 2019. So by October of next year, we're going to have almost a half a trillion dollars hit the U.S. economy. And you look at corporate profits, yes, they'll probably be slowing down, but they'll still be growing at double digits thanks to dramatic cuts in corporate tax rates. When you cut tax rates from 35% to 21%, folks, that means profits are bigger. And that's what we've been seeing all year. They were up 25% in the first quarter. They were up over 20% in the second quarter. And they're predicting close to 20% for the third quarter. What I do think has contributed to this abrupt market sell-off is the perceived high growth rate we are now experiencing in the U.S. economy will end up being inflationary along with the trade war. Therefore, the Fed will keep hiking interest rates. Another factor which is absent this month and will return next month is corporate buybacks. For our listeners, we are now into third quarter earnings reporting season, and there is a rule, an SEC rule, if you're a corporation and you're getting ready to report your earnings, you're in what I call a blackout period, which means you're prohibited from buying your stock. I mean, basically, you have insider knowledge of what your earnings are going to be. If the earnings are going to disappoint and they're going to be bad, if we didn't have this rule, you'd probably sell your stock and get out before the disappointment. On the other hand, if you're going to blow out your earnings, you could buy your stock ahead of earnings. So corporate buybacks, which have been a major stimulus behind stock prices this year, corporations usually about the last week of the month before the quarter ends, and until they report earnings, they have to go into blackout, which means they are prohibited from buying their own stock. So one of the driving forces behind stock prices this year has been those buybacks, which are on record to rise. Goldman Sachs estimates that they could rise as much as $1 trillion. After most of the reporting of Q3 earnings is mostly behind us by the end of the month, corporate buybacks should resume in earnest, with the last 2 months of the year being the strongest months for share buybacks by companies. A lot of people attribute the Santa Claus rally that you normally get towards the end of the year. A lot of that can be traced to corporations buying back their stock. So it has been companies, not investors, which are behind most of this year's move in the stock market. I thought it was interesting. The Wall Street Journal did a story on Wednesday highlighting money flowing into popular index ETFs and index mutual funds have slowed substantially. Net inflows into U.S. mutual funds and exchange-traded funds are down 46% through the first three quarters of the year, according to Morningstar. They totaled roughly about $282 billion this year versus $517 billion last year. So investors are returning to cash and defensive positions as the stock market heads higher. Money continues to flow out of active fund managers for four out of the last 5 years, and even Vanguard, the granddaddy of index funds, has experienced a reduction of inflows into its popular index funds. Inflows into Vanguard's index funds are down by 36% this year. And in my experience and my career, bear markets don't begin when investors start getting defensive ahead of a bear market occurring.
Well, it's interesting you say that. You mentioned the Wall Street Journal article, but some of your views are held by other financial commentators as well.
Today is a good day to take a breath. I mean, I think when you look at what's going on, 325 on the 10-year is not a dangerous level. What's concerning to the market is that we went from 305 to 325 in the space of 3 days. And the market's going to take a break when that happens. But is it justified? You know, has inflation spiked since a week ago? No. No. I mean, wages were growing this year. We started the year growing 2.7% year over year. We were at a whopping 2.8 in the last jobs report. We still have a core PCE that's right at the Fed's target. And while I know that there's some concerns that Powell's comments have signified a more aggressive Fed, we don't think it's the case. You still have three dots in that dot plot next year, and we're not sure they're going to achieve those three. I think it's time to take a breath, and we'd be more inclined to buy here than sell. We think this has gotten overdone on both the bond and the stock side.
Our thinking has been that the market would dip before the midterm elections, not because of the midterm elections, but because this backdrop of the Fed hiking with a lot of global uncertainties, particularly because of trade. That's why I wanted to be in front of you this morning. My thinking is that this is a dip that's already a little bit oversold in terms of versus S&P fair value. But I think we have just a little bit more to go downward before we bounce higher, because U.S. equities are not oversold versus foreign equities. Europe is being beaten up quite badly, 15% decline from its highs. And emerging market Asia, on the pressures of these tariffs, which we think are going to get worse, that is down well into bear market territory. At this stage, we think it is a dip to buy. Of course, you always have to wait for the dips in order to be able to buy them. Our view is that buy big banks, stick with growth stocks in the United States, and try to buy some of the value opportunities you see abroad.
What's interesting about yesterday, if you paid attention to the market action of yesterday, is that it was really tightly contained in equities. So when you looked at, everybody wants to talk about what happened with yields yesterday, the yield curve actually steepened. That's a bullish sign, right? And we're at 32 basis points now. You're heading into a good seasonal point of time, obviously November, December, into the spring. And if you look at the signs of stress in markets, right, credit default swaps, OIS spreads, very well behaved, right? They just didn't show the signs of stress. So when you get that type of action just in equities, I agree with David. I think it probably creates more of a bullish sentiment against the fundamental backdrop.
So, Jim, these are a few of the commentators who also agree that this bull market has further to run. And you've stated previously that you don't believe that this is the beginning of a bear market, and that we're pretty much not even getting close to a recession. Is that correct?
Yeah. And Chris, one of those commentators talked about the yield curve steepening. One of the things that we pay a lot of attention to and follow very closely is credit spreads. When you start to begin to see stress, the kind of stress that we saw develop in 2007 and 2008, leading to not only a recession, but also trouble in the financial markets, credit spreads start to widen because people are worried about, let's say, the economy slowing down or heading into a recession, which means it'll be more difficult for, let's say, lower quality credits to make their payments. And we just haven't seen that. There was only once that we saw it recently, and that was at the end of 2015, in the beginning of 2016, when stocks fell 6 weeks in a row consecutively, credit spreads just blew out. Now, a lot of that was coming from the energy sector, and we were able to take advantage of that for our clients and pick up some very good yields. You know, the credit guys get it first before the equity guys do, so we always pay a lot more attention to credit. And right now, we're just not seeing that in credit default swaps. We're not seeing it in credit spreads. And then we're also seeing that align with what we're seeing in the LEIs, the leading economic indicators. Yes, some of them have come off, but they're still strong, and the economy is growing at its fastest rate. It's done in nearly 8 years. So there's just too much stimulus right now for that to happen. Now, eventually, the Fed will do what it always does, which is raise rates to the point they break the economy and the market. And eventually, these rate hikes are going to start kicking in and hitting the economy. This week, for example, mortgage rates got as high as 4.9% on their way to 5. If you think back 2 years ago, you could have got a 30-year mortgage for 3.5. Now you're talking about a 30-year mortgage that's close to 5%. That can add up, Chris, to several hundred dollars more per month. And I noticed talking to mortgage brokers, in order to get their clients into homes, because homes have gone up, mortgage rates have gone up, this is the only thing that concerns me, is buyers, in order to get in, are going to variable rate mortgages. And that was one of the problems that we had in the last downturn, is buyers got into houses they really couldn't afford. The only way they could get into them was buying these sucker rate mortgages that were very low, but eventually they went up and the buyers ended up defaulting. So buyers right now are shifting into variable rate mortgages to avoid paying, let's say, a 5% mortgage, which may not enable them to qualify to buy the house. The real risk there is if rates do continue to climb, and we get into a secular bear market in interest rates, which I think we are, when you consider that 2 years ago, 10-year treasuries were at 1.3% in the summer. Today, we're talking about treasuries being over 3%. So we're seeing this carry over into home sales are down, pending home sales, new home sales, new construction, auto sales have peaked. So there are some signs that certain sectors of the economy are slowing down, but at least for the remainder of this year and most of next year, there are no signs of a recession with this much stimulus hitting the economy. Stocks aren't cheap, but we're not in a bubble right now. I have never seen a bear market begin in an economy that is booming. Interest rates, though rising, are still at historical lows, and so much money coming out of the market and on the sidelines. That's just not the beginning of a bear market. And we'll talk about that in the next segment on what to look for. But right now, Chris, I just don't see a recession or a bear market.
Well, and this is good information for our listeners right now, Jim, just with everyone looking at the volatility that's playing out. And I want to remind our listeners that in 2 weeks, Financial Sense has our 2018 Financial Strategy and Wealth Preservation Conference that's going to be at the Hilton San Diego in Del Mar. So do call to reserve your seat, where Jim and some other advisors from our staff will be discussing much of what we're talking about now in further detail. Call 1-888-486-3939.
Let me just add, also speaking at that conference, we are going to have a tax attorney and specialist, Chris Hennessy from Putnam. He's going to be there talking about the tax bill that went into effect. Because, Chris, it's one of the reasons why you're seeing earnings rise as much as they are. There are so many changes that came into that tax law that are being implemented this year. And I would say a good majority of our audience living in the U.S., and especially those of you that live in high tax states like California, New Jersey, New York, and others, are going to get a big surprise when it comes to filing your tax return next April. We're going to talk about the implications of estate taxes, and you better take advantage of them right now, especially if you're Larry lots of bucks and have, let's say, a good net worth, a high net worth, or you have a family business that's worth a lot of money, or you have real estate holdings. We're going to get into preserving wealth because you have a window of opportunity, because this law sunsets in the next decade and could change if Congress changes or the presidency changes in 2020. So we're going to talk about preserving wealth in addition to going into detail on the sequence of the final end stages of the bull market, some of which we're going to touch upon today.
Should our listeners be staying on the sidelines? Should they be in a pattern of holding right now, buying? What would you recommend?
You know, Chris, I would be leery of chasing momentum stocks or stocks sporting high PE ratios, as many of the FANG or what we call FAM stocks, which includes Microsoft. If we are in the beginning stages of a topping process, which is what I believe, I would look at, for example, value where you can find it. I love quality companies that have been beaten down 50 or 60% that are in the midst of a turnaround, or there is some kind of catalyst that could change the company's fortunes. I'm finding them in the energy sector, the industrial sector, and believe it or not, in the healthcare sector. Most of our technicians on this program still believe the leaders of the market the last 2 years, technology, consumer discretionary, healthcare, and now energy, will be the place to be in Q4 and the rest of the year. Now, the S&P 500 is expected to post earnings growth of, they're estimating, 19.2% on revenue gains of 7.3%, according to data from FactSet. Now, this follows a 25% jump in earnings and a 10% rise in revenues that we saw in the second quarter. So things are slowing down a little bit, and this will probably have more import when we get to next year, because year-over-year comparisons will get harder to beat. If earnings are up 25% in the first quarter of this year, when we get to the first quarter of next year, they'll be comparing to that big increase. And it's just, you get down to the law of numbers, the numbers are going to be smaller. But however, earnings have exceeded estimates on average about close to 5%. Now, if this average holds, then we could see third quarter earnings come in roughly about 23%. Energy is expected to be the quarter's number one sector, and for good reason. Earnings could be up almost 100% versus the same time last year, and a lot of that is due to the rise in oil. The average oil price in the third quarter was close to $70 a barrel, which was up 44% from a year ago. So if I had to be in the market, those were probably the areas I'd be looking for. And I love buying stocks that are distressed, stocks that have fallen 50, 60%. And, you know, as Dave Morgan and I talked about in the first hour, you know, start looking at some of the area in precious metals, because silver is down 70% from its peak. Gold is down, and this is, you know, gold right now in precious metals is an unloved asset. It may be too early, but somewhere down the road, there's going to be some great bargains and great upside if things turn out the way we think they are.
So in summing up, Jim, you believe there's never one reason why the stock market corrects like we're seeing right now. The trigger really might have been a rise in bond yields to 3.25% this time, just as a rise in wages triggered that correction we talked about in February. But as we began this segment, we went over the eight reasons to worry as to why stocks corrected or could head even lower from the rise in interest rates. Actually, the rise in, there are a few things. The rise in interest rates, the rise in oil prices. We've talked about the trade wars, high-priced tech stocks such as the FANGs, but also there a possible uptick in inflation. So if your tendency is to worry and to fret over the markets, there are plenty of reasons out there to worry. But for now, it sounds like, Jim, you do believe this will end up being a correction, that no recession or bear market is in sight, at least for this year, and possibly late next year.
Chris, that's currently our view, and we base that on our leading economic indicators, which are still in favorable territory. We have a recession indicator, which is rising, but it's nowhere close to a recession. And we also have a Fed monetary indicator, which is still accommodative. Now, if the Fed hikes two or three more times, we could actually be getting ourselves into trouble with a constriction of money pulling out of the market. And let's not forget that the Fed is shrinking its balance sheet by $50 billion a month, that's $600 billion a year, at a time when the government is issuing more debt than it has in many, many years, because the deficits are mounting to almost $1 trillion. But let's not forget, we began this rate rising cycle with interest rates at zero. They're at currently, the Fed funds rate is around 2.25%. That's the lowest we've seen interest rates in 5,000 years of recorded history. Now, the Fed is getting more aggressive. This year, they started out and said, we're going to raise three times. But with the increase in economic growth, they're saying, well, we're going to go four times. And so the Fed has raised interest rates eight times since they began this cycle. So we may only be two or three rate hikes away from, let's say, that eventually impacting the economy. But it is going to be countered, as I mentioned, by almost $500 trillion of stimulus that will hit the economy next year. So I believe it's impossible to time the top. I haven't found anybody that can do it perfectly, which is one reason we're not fully invested in the market. The good news is there are favorable alternatives to stocks if you know where to look for them in the individual bond market. With rising interest rates, we are no longer live in what is called TINA. There is no alternative to stocks. Well, that's no longer true. Today, you have a lot more options to choose from, which is what we have done and will continue to do, taking more money off the table as I believe the markets head higher and responding to a faster growing economy and along with it, stronger corporate earnings.
Now, in our next segment, we'll look at how credit and business cycles end and bear markets begin, and also what to look for. Stay tuned for our next segment.
Bye. Financial Sense Wealth Management would like to invite all of our listeners to join us this year at the Hilton San Diego Del Mar Hotel, Saturday, October 27th, for our annual Financial Strategy and Wealth Preservation Conference. Seats are limited, and all attendees receive a complimentary discount at the Hilton San Diego Del Mar Hotel by calling us today at 858-487-3939. Once again, seats are limited, so call today, 858-487-3939, for this special once-a-year event.
Well, in our last segment, we talked about the various worries people have about this week's downturn and sell-off in stocks. Now, we know that we're in a Fed rate-raising cycle, and the backup in interest rates this week was a trigger for stocks selling off. But what we want to address here, as we get to the end of one of the longest economic recoveries in history, and the same for a record-long bull market, how do you know when we're at the end? What are the signs? And what do you look for, and how do you protect capital? This is a subject that will be covered in depth at this year's Financial Strategy and Wealth Preservation Conference that we're having in San Diego in 2 weeks. Now, Jim, I know the firm has a number of indicators that you watch, from the LEIs, the credit spreads, monetary and recessionary indicators, to technical indicators in the market. But is there an overwhelming or maybe a complete set of things that you look for that tell you when we're approaching the top of a cycle? And if we are, what do you do for yourself and your clients to protect against a downturn?
You know, I want to start out with saying that bull and bear markets, booms and busts in the economy, are natural occurring events similar to what we see in the seasons of nature. They're usually a product of a credit cycle that lends itself to business expansions and contractions. When banks are feeling optimistic and the economy is booming, they're free in lending money. When things start to go sour, they start to pull back, loans aren't renewed, they're tight on credit standards, and credit is contracted in the economy, we end up in a recession. History doesn't repeat itself, Chris, but it oftentimes rhymes, as Mark Twain once said. So every cycle is different in many ways, but they are also similar. And what I want to cover today are those patterns that are the same in almost every boom and bust and every bear and bull market we've had in the last half century. As we have pointed out, we have had 12 recessions since the end of World War II, and 11 of those 12 were preceded by Fed rate hikes. The business cycle expands and contracts, and it's all based on credit. Following the credit cycle, interest rates, and what is going on in the bond markets is the key to understanding where you are in the cycle and how, most importantly, you should be positioning yourself as an investor. And here's the point that needs to be stressed here. Is recessions and bear markets begin when optimism is at an all-time high. The economy looks great, and it seems that the good times can only get better. Think back to, let's say, 2007, when the stock market was hitting a level we hadn't seen since the beginning of the year 2000. Housing prices had peaked, but they were still elevated. And the Fed was telling everyone the economy was in great shape and there had never been a downturn in housing. Well, we all know what followed during the next 2 years. So things always look good at the top. And this is what is the perhaps the deceiving thing that catches people by surprise. Bear markets and recessions don't begin when everyone was feeling cautious, cash is sitting on the sidelines, and everyone is predicting a downturn. Think back to 2011. Even though the market pulled back double digits and we had a crisis in Europe with the pig countries, we had Fukushima, the Arab Spring, oil prices were at $100 a barrel, everybody was predicting doom and gloom. Another crisis was around the corner. And here we are 7 years later. So when things are looking good, that's when you need to worry the most. When people start saying that, hey, from this point, things can only get better for corporations in the economy, That's where you start paying attention. It's not when people are feeling pessimistic or gloomy about the future.
Well, and Jim, I think that's why there's concern right now with this current dip. And you'd mentioned about optimism being at an all-time high, that sort of thing. So let's peel back the onion and dig into some other factors that can help us to look objectively. I mean, I know that you follow closely certain economic indicators and other fundamental factors that help to gauge where we are in the economic cycle. But what are the patterns you've found, Jim, that are similar in past cycles? And what do you currently see in this one?
Well, one thing I'd like to say here is that market tops and recessions are difficult to predict, but you always can prepare for them. Cycles are always self-correcting. We go from one extreme to the other, from booms to busts, from bulls to bear markets. And what investors fail to recognize is that busts are caused by booms, and psychology plays an essential component in understanding the cycle that matters most to investors. Just as weather cycles have a regularity to them, the same is true when it comes to a business cycle. We can see what is taking place in the economy, in the financial markets, being reflected in how people feel and think. There are cycles in human behavior that match economic and market events. And we see this, Chris, there's always this pendulum that swings from one extreme to the other when attitudes and behavior change. And let me give you a good example. We can go from greed in periods of optimism, when everybody thinks things can only get better, to fear in market bottoms when people are pessimistic, having gone through, think of what people were feeling. In March of 2009, the S&P had lost nearly 60%. The economy had been in the longest recession we had seen since the Great Depression. As a result of that, we go from feeling optimistic to feeling pessimistic. We go from risk tolerance, hey, I'll buy it at any price, to risk aversion. I won't buy it at no matter how low it goes. We go from credence to skepticism. We go from faith in the future to doubts about the present. And between the urgency to buy to the panic to sell. So you see, of these things and behavior match what we're seeing in the business cycle. When people feel positive and expect the future to remain bright, they turn to making money and get fixated on greed. Just the reverse occurs when they're feeling, less optimistic, and their feelings turn to pessimism. They turn negative, fear takes over, and they become more concerned about losing money and protecting capital than they are making money. In contrary to all the things that were taught in the CFA program or you're taking finance in college, those academic studies about efficient market theories, investors are not even-keeled and unemotional. Most investors swing between greed when they are optimistic and fearful when they're pessimistic. What most of these changes in emotions taking place at the wrong time. I'll never forget there was a period, and this was one particular individual, and literally this was the day, Chris, before the market bottomed. This individual came into the office on March 8th and said, you know what, I'm staying up at night, I can't handle it, I look and the Fed is involved, the government, we're heading for a financial crisis, this reminds me of the Great Depression, and against our insistence, he wanted to sell everything he had. He goes, he was only about 40% invested in stocks, and they were more conservative. Yes, they were down, but not by much compared to the market. But it was just keeping him up at night. And he said, I have a heart condition. I don't feel good. He sold on March 8th. The market bottomed on March 9th. And of course, we know what happened. It turned around, and we're now up over 300%. So when you take a look at these patterns in investor behavior with investors, it follows a very similar pattern. You'll find this in just every bull market. Positive events lead to increased optimism. What are we hearing? We're hearing the unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in 4 or 5 decades. We're hearing economic growth has finally broken out of that low 1-2% of the previous 8 years to now we're growing at 3-4%. That increased optimism makes people more risk tolerant. They're more willing to pay for stocks at higher prices. How would you kind of justify Amazon selling at 200 times earnings or Netflix over 200 times earnings? And that increase in risk tolerance causes risk premiums to be less. People are willing to, for example, buy low-quality credits, and you see this reflected in junk bond yields right now. A reduction in risk premiums equates to lower demand for, let's say, quality assets, and the risk curve shifts over to the risky side. There's also a reduction of demand returns on risky assets. There was a time, believe it or not, in 2009 where you could have got double-digit returns on, let's say, junk bonds. Today, those spreads are just barely a couple points over treasuries. Higher prices make assets even riskier. Just take a look at what happened to some of the FANG stocks like Facebook, where they lost 20% in a single trading day. So this cycle sort of repeats itself. The good news leads to a change in investor optimism. It leads to a change in investor behavior. So when you look at what takes place towards a market top, that is the greatest source of risk, is there is a belief there is no risk. Widespread risk tolerance or a high degree of comfort with risk is probably the greatest harbinger of subsequent market declines. Is optimism and greed take things to extreme? Think of the price people were willing to pay at any price to own tech stocks in 2000 or what they were willing to pay for houses back in 2007.
Well, I'm glad you're covering the impact that human psychology makes on all of this, because it sounds like it's just as important of a role as credit and interest rates in the economic and market cycles that we see repeated really so often as we go from boom to bust and from bull to bear markets. But I remember, Jim, a few months ago, Chris Poplava had mentioned to me, he said, always trust the credit markets. He said that if there's ever a divergence in things you're following, listen to the credit markets. So I wanted to ask you, based on that, Jim, how does credit and the reaction to credit, how does that factor into all of this?
Oh, it plays a major factor, because any boom and bust cycle, there's always credit. The economy, you know, think about when things get better. The economy moves into a period of prosperity. Providers of credit thrive, increasing their capital base. Banks are making money on loans. And because bad news is scarce, the risk entailed in lending and investing seems to have shrunk. I mean, think about how lenders felt about stock prices, or for that matter, housing prices, when housing prices were going up double digits a year as they did in the last cycle in the last decade. Risk aversion disappears. Financial institutions move to expand their businesses. That is, they're providing more capital and more lending. They compete for market share by lowering demand on the returns they get on the money they lend, lowering credit standards and providing more capital for a given transaction. And that's one of the things that we have seen take place in the bond market this year is loan covenants. These are things that restrict the borrower from taking certain actions that would jeopardize the loan. We are going from covenant tight to covenant light. Now, on the extreme side, when you get into a recession or a bear market, lenders take the opposite view. Losses cause lenders to become discouraged, and they shy away from making loans. Think back to 2009 and 2010, trying to get a mortgage loan or refinance your house. Risk averseness rises along with it, interest rates, credit restrictions, and covenant requirements. Banks get stricter and lenders get stricter, including the capital markets. Less capital is made available, and at the trough of the cycle, it only goes to the most qualified borrowers. You have to have almost AAA credit to get any money. Companies become starved for capital. Borrowers are unable to roll over their debts, so they default, leading to more defaults and bankruptcies. The process contributes and reinforces the economic contraction. And that's really how the credit cycle plays into the business cycle and why I've always said here on the program, you want to find out where we are, watch the bond market. The bond market will give you your first clue. And one of the things we talked in the last session is credit spreads haven't blown out like they did in 2016. If there is one reason we follow the bond market, credit spreads, credit default swaps so closely, just look around the next time there is a financial crisis and you will probably find a lender behind it. If you look at what happened in the credit markets, you find similar patterns that develop in every crisis. When you're at a bust or a recession, you find the following. So when you think of you are in a recession, think what happens to lenders. There's a fear of losing money. There's heightened risk aversion and skepticism. Doesn't matter how good the business plan looks or what you want to borrow money and how profitable it may be, there's skepticism. People don't want to lend. Unwillingness to lend and invest regardless of the merit of the project. There's a shortage of capital everywhere. People are finding it hard to get credit. Economic contraction and difficulty makes it difficult to refinance debt, so you start to see more defaults, bankruptcies, and restructures. Now think about what happens at market tops. It turns just in the opposite direction. There's fear of missing out on profitable opportunities, reduced risk aversion and skepticism, too much money is chasing too few deals, willingness to buy securities in increased quantity, willingness to buy securities in reduced quality as we see today, high asset prices, lower returns, high risk, and skimpy risk premiums. When everybody believes it's only going to get better, just listen to the news today on the economy. Hey, we've had a couple great quarters. We're expecting more great quarters. We're expecting more great corporate earnings. That is very typical when you get towards the top of any cycle.
So if you were to sum up the credit, the business, and market cycle from boom to bust, I think it might be helpful, Jim, to boil it down to a sequential pattern that our listeners might find useful.
Well, let's kind of blend the credit cycle, the business cycle, psychology, and market into a pattern. Let's begin. We're coming out of a recession. The economy is growing, and the economic reports are positive. Every quarter, you start seeing that things are improving. Corporate earnings are rising, and they're beating expectations. The media carry only good news. You turn on television, you don't hear bad news anymore. The security markets start to strengthen and rise. Investors grow increasingly confident and optimistic. Risk is perceived as being scarce and benign. Investors think of risk bearing as a sure route to profit. In other words, the riskier the investment, the higher the return. Greed begins to motivate behavior. Demand for investment opportunities exceeds supply, so you're willing to pay for anything. Asset prices go beyond intrinsic value. Does anybody really believe Amazon, with $200 billion in sales, is worth over $1 trillion? Capital markets are open, making it easy to raise money and for low-quality lender or borrowers to roll over their debt. You see very few defaults. Skepticism is low, faith is high, meaning risky deals are getting done. No one can imagine things ever going wrong. No favorable developments seem improbable. Everyone assumes things will get better forever. Investors ignore the possibility of loss and worry only about missing out on opportunities. It's kind of like the buy the dip syndrome. No one can think of a reason to sell, and no one is forced to sell. Buyers outnumber sellers. Investors would be happy to buy if the market dips. Prices reach new highs, as they did recently last month. The media celebrates this exciting event. Investors become euphoric, carefree. Security holders marvel at their own intelligence. Everybody is an investment genius. Those who remain on the sidelines feel remorse, and thus they capitulate and they buy. Prospective returns are low, in some cases negative. Think of what happened to the bond market in 2016 when you were loaning money, nearly a third of all sovereign debt was negative. In other words, you paid the government to lend them money. Risk is high. Investors should forget about missing out on opportunities and worry only about losing money. That is the time you should be cautious.
On the downside, what does that look like? I imagine it's the reverse.
Sure, because instead of the economy growing and expanding, it's slowing. The reports you start to see are negative. Corporate earnings are flat or declining and falling short of projections or expectations. Media reports, when you turn on the television, are negative. Security markets are starting to decline. And now investors are becoming a bit worried. They're not quite sure if we're in a downturn, but they're becoming worried. Risk is seen everywhere. Investors see risk bearing as nothing but a sure way to lose money. Fear begins to dominate investor psychology. Demand for securities falls short of supply. Asset prices fall. Capital markets slam shut, making it hard to issue securities. You don't see as many IPOs or debt offerings. Defaults begin to soar because borrowers can't roll over their debt. Skepticism is high, and meaning safe deals can only be done. No one considers at this point that the economy can improve. Think of what we were thinking back in 2008, in 2009, actually even into 2010. Everyone assumes things will get worse forever. They ignore the possibility of missing opportunity, and all anybody can think about is losing money. No one thinks of reasons to buy. Sellers outnumber buyers, and you hear that saying, don't try to catch a falling knife, take place. Prices reach new record lows. What you hear each day reported on the news is the number of stocks below their 250-day moving average, the number of stocks hitting record lows. Investors are becoming depressed, and at some point, they panic. Security holders feel dumb and disillusioned. I can't believe I paid the price for what I did. Those who abstain from buying and feel validated are celebrated for their brilliance. Those who give up sell at depressed prices, adding further to the downward spiral. Implied prospective returns are sky high. Risk is extremely low. Investors should forget at this point about the risk of losing money and worry only about missing opportunity. That is the time you become aggressive.
So, Jim, based on everything you've mentioned, the upswing, the downside, where would you say we are now?
You know, Chris, I would say we're probably three quarters through this cycle. It has been extended by stimulus and historically low interest rates, which makes this cycle different but yet the same, because you just normally don't get the size and magnitude of stimulus we're seeing coming at the end of a business cycle at the same time the Fed is raising interest rates. So as I mentioned, next year we're going to get almost $500 trillion of stimulus. But the sequence of events I've described here will eventually unfold, and today's optimism on the economy and markets will eventually turn to pessimism and the fear of losing money.
So, Jim, we've covered a lot of ground today, hopefully put some folks at ease about what they may be able to expect with the markets to come. But, Jim, what do you see in the weeks ahead?
You know, Chris, coming up in the weeks ahead, we are going to be full-blown in corporate earnings seasons. The expectation right now is earnings will be up about 19%, slightly lower than where they were in the second quarter when they were up 25% in the first quarter, up over 20% in the second quarter. But, you know, earnings expectations have been beating by an average of about 5%. So if we take 19% the expectations, I would not be surprised if we see something like 20%. And of course, it'll be important in terms of what companies are saying about the final quarter. So we're going to be in full-blown earnings season for the month of October. Then we have the midterm elections coming up in the first week of November. And then it's on to the Christmas season, the biggest season of the year when retailers go from red to black. So that's what we see coming up in the weeks ahead. And outside of that, another Fed rate hike coming in December. So in the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.